थे WBAI New York, it's 11 a.m. and coming up next is Living for the City. Hello and welcome to Living for the City. Living for the City is a program focusing on telling stories, our histories, our perspectives of local communities throughout our area and beyond. If you've lived in New York City for any length of time, you know how extremely difficult it is to get the media to report on a subject in depth, tell the truth, or even cover an issue. We examine those very issues, especially dealing with the real estate industry and the very powerful lobbyists. We look at housing, land, air, and water use, including sunlight, and we do so truthfully, accurately, and without any conflicts of interest. My name is Michael G. Haskins. I'm the program host and executive producer of Living for the City, and the senior producer is Jillian Jonas. And I just want to add right here, job so very well done by Jillian Jonas, along with Alicia Boyd and the guests that participated in the virtual town hall last week. Well done, Jillian. Congratulations. Before I go further, however, and introduce my guests, I want to familiarize you to the concept of Sankofa. Sankofa is a word in the Akan-Twi and Fante languages of Ghana that translates to retrieve, literally go back and get. And just like the Sankofa bird that is looking back over its shoulder to see where it has come from, we look back in history to see where we've come from, to better understand how we exist in this current moment, and to help us chart a course for the future. And on this date in peace and social justice history, January 25th, 2002, we just have one item today. A group of Israeli reservists issued a declaration saying they would not serve the Israeli Defense Force, or IDF, if assigned to the occupied West Bank or Gaza Strip. It was called the Combatant's Letter, and the organization Courage to Refuse grew out of their resistance. Captain David Zanshin and Lieutenant Yaniv Itzkovitz, officers in an elite unit, realized the missions assigned to them as commanders in the IDF had in fact nothing to do with the defense of the State of Israel, but were rather intended to maintain control of the occupied territories at the price of oppressing the local Palestinian population. Within 3 months, 69 such refuseniks had been jailed. 629 Israeli soldiers ultimately signed the pledge. Over 280 members of Courage to Refuse were court-martialed and jailed for periods of up to 35 days as a result of their refusal. And that concludes our Sankofa look back in history for this week's edition of Living for the City. Now, speaking of our program, Living for the City, we are very pleased to bring our listeners an update on still another controversial development project, again, with a positive outcome, at least so far. Earlier in the month, a judge ruled in favor of the plaintiffs, the Seaport Coalition, ordering a TRO, temporary restraining order, stopping the Howard Hughes Corporation from developing two luxury towers within a historic district, permission granted by the Landmarks Commission, the LPC, during the de Blasio administration. Also of interest, the judge found LPC violated its very mission of working as an independent agency by acting in concert with the developer. With me to explain are Megan Malvern, founder of Children First NYC, and David Sheldon, co-founder of Save Our Seaport. Both organizations are part of the Seaport Coalition. Welcome to you both this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
All right, so let's see. Who should we start with? We start with you. We'll start with you, David, and shift very quickly to Megan. Explain the legal victory here. There are a number of things that I mentioned in the introduction here, the lack of landmarks commission independence and so on. So just explain that for us in brief, David.
Thank you. I'll try and do it in a nutshell. It was an Article 78 suit against the Landmarks Preservation Commission, indicating that, you know, they had not fulfilled their stated goals, their mission, that they had broken their own rules. There were two elements essentially to the judge's decision. One, that the LPC, Landmarks Preservation Commission, had broken with precedent in former decisions that they had made, specifically the 250 Water Street. A city agency can break with precedent, but they must offer an explanation for doing so. They must give their rationale. The LPC did not do so. They simply said, wink, said, we don't have to pay attention to precedent, proceeded to ignore it and never explain it. The other issue was the linking of this site, 250 Water Street, with a benefit for the South Street Seaport Museum and with affordable housing. The LPC is not supposed to consider any other ancillary benefits to what is being proposed to it. Here they were clearly doing so despite, you know, making verbal denials. Well, we're not going to talk about that, and then listening to it for the next hour. It was a very deliberate attempt to link the museum with this project. And that is, in fact, something revealed in Howard Hughes Corporation documents. They declared that they would use the museum for political cover, quote unquote, and they did so. And this was not something appropriate for the LPC to do. And that is why the judge ultimately ruled in our favor against the LPC. And there was several, there were several years worth of foiled documents that demonstrated our allegation that this had been something connived over several years.
David, the judge called it a quid pro quo in terms of this linkage that you just mentioned. What did he mean by that, calling it a quid pro quo?
Don't remember exactly where in the decision that falls, but if we're talking about the museum, the idea was that if this, and it was publicly, you know, promoted, that if this tower at 250 Water Street were approved, it would make a $40 million benefit available to the museum. And they worded it very carefully because, in fact, no one intended to give the museum $40 million. This was going to go into a fund. And in fact, Howard Hughes was not giving That's the developer was not giving this money to the museum. It was buying air rights from the city, and the city was then going to put this money into a fund to support the museum. So
were those,
the quid pro quo was you approve the building, you get money to the museum.
Right, right, yes. What about those air rights? Were they done improperly or properly, should I say?
That's out of my bandwidth, but I'd have to say properly. However, at one point, the Economic Development Corporation did write a memo to the controller saying, well, these air rights will have to be put up for open bidding.
Mm-hmm.
And then subsequently said, well, you know, we were wrong. We can just go to one bidder.
So they actually, oh, my goodness, okay. I didn't know that. I hadn't read that. And we're talking about what is taking place down at the South Street Seaport area, something, a place in New York that many, many folks in this listening area are familiar with. This radio station some years ago, not that long ago actually, was located right there on Wall Street, right at the end of Water Street, the last building on Water Street. So we're very familiar with that area. I'd like to bring into the conversation Megan Malvern, co-founder of Children First NYC. How do you view the situation now with this particular case being at its particular stage?
It reestablished my faith in legal proceedings and in following the letter of the law. It also, you know, reinstilled the love of FOIL through the FOILs that we were able to gather and spent thousands of hours, combined hours, reading and figuring out and draw and, you know, making all the connections, we were able to show that there was complete collusion between the LPC and Howard Hughes. In fact, you know, LPC, the Landmarks Preservation Commission, was meeting with Howard Hughes before they even bought the property. I think as much as 8 months before they had bought the property, they were, I'm guessing, getting the wink and the nod and the pat in the back of, yeah, we'll make this happen. And then Howard Hughes bought a parking lot that has traditionally never had an opportunity to build above 12 stories for $180 million in a high-risk flood zone on top of a thermometer factory that was riddled with toxins.
Yes.
So, you know, I the fix was in, and I believe that justice has been, for now, as you pointed out, served, but of course they're appealing. Howard Hughes is appealing this decision.
Yeah, yeah. Megan, do you think this is significant, and how so? I know you do, as you just said, but how is it significant specifically? I mean, there's been a history of rejecting development at the site at least four times prior because it was out of scale. Talk a little bit about that.
You know, not to make anything too grandiose, but, you know, this site in this neighborhood, I believe, has far-reaching implications into many neighborhoods where there are historic districts and historic buildings. What happened in this instance that the judge, you know, rightly called was an improper linkage is LPC, in effect, decided where funding would go. LPC decided that the museum was a worthy nonprofit and decided to sell off one of our city's assets for something they thought was worthwhile. And I'm not disputing that the museum is or isn't worthwhile, but carry that idea out across the city. You would have LPC commissioners picking their own agenda items, deciding what was the right nonprofit in XYZ neighborhood, and then thusly selling off, you know, assets in that neighborhood that are connected to that community and to those people over their opinion. I think actually this is a win for the LPC. I think it really does draw a line again and gives them the ability to really detach themselves from this kind of shenanigans that Howard Hughes, and I believe also in conjunction with the chair, Sarah Carroll, linked and forced down the throats of these commissioners. They had to acknowledge this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was fair, and I think it was improper. And so I believe that this redrawing of these lines, you know, reestablishing these guardrails is going to be is the right move for our city, and, you know, the right move for our historic buildings and districts. And also, who gets to pick where the funding goes? I think that's an important part of this this whole puzzle.
Megan Malvern, I wonder if we would just take a step back for a moment, because you mentioned something and it made me recall our previous conversations about the site itself, the area, and some of the toxins that were in that area in previous years. For the benefit of some of the listeners who may not have heard our prior conversation, what were some of your concerns and the group's concerns and the people that you work with and collaborate with during this effort about the toxins that were in that neighborhood? And name those for us, please.
Sure. The one that really, for me, got my goat was that I went to a community board one meeting, which, by the way, everyone, please attend your community board meetings. You'll learn so much about your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I went to the meeting where Howard Hughes was proposing that they were going to join in a brownfield program, which is a funded program that encourages developers to get their hands dirty in lots that have a previous historical use that could be dangerous, you know, like an old, I guess in the city you hear a lot of the ones that were like a dry cleaner, that sort of thing.
Right. Yes.
But mm-hmm. ours, our industrial neighborhood of, you know, the seaport where New York City sort of started, went so far back that there was thermometer factories and barometer factories manufactured right there on that spot. A few locations in the acre-wide slot that 250 Water Street now is bordered by. As well as there was a gas station, so there was fuel tanks that were left underneath there, and you know, other nasty things that aren't great for families and for kids and for people. So they talked about joining this program and said that there's mercury. And I was like, mercury? That's interesting. That's really dangerous. Mm. And then we followed up with questions and asked about if it was elemental mercury, and they had no answers for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then our research completely defined the areas of which had thermometer factories and manufacturing, and then they had to come up with a whole new clean plan based on the research and the hard work that the mothers and the fathers who are part of Children First mm-hmm. Found and pretty much demanded be recognized. So that was the start of Children First, and that's why we were really involved from the get-go.
Yeah, I can only imagine, as I'm hearing you talk about this, what, you know, where we would be now, where you all would be now, had you not done that research and uncovered this material. I mean, it would have been probably, well, I shouldn't say probably, but I'm just thinking it would have been like that issue had never been raised.
It was definitely impactful.
Yeah.
And it had, we established new levels for mercury being like the vapor. And the camps, these are these little machines that set up around the corner, and they measure the levels of various mm-hmm. you know, pollutants. We established through the help of our community, we got a person hired to help us understand all this stuff, and we have new standards now that are going to be, I believe, probably used again and again when there is elemental mercury this close to so many vulnerable people. I mean, small children, pregnant ladies. And also across the street is Southbridge Tower, which is a naturally occurring retirement center. And there's lots of people who've been really hard hit by the effects of 9/11 that still live there. Lung cancers, brain cancers, like all the stuff that the 9/11 survivors are dealing with. So we really, really, I'm very proud of how it was handled. And thank you for letting me say something about
it. Sure, absolutely. That's Megan Malvern. Megan Malvern is the founder of Children First NYC. David Sheldon, co-founder of Save Our Seaport. How is this, all of what we're talking about right now and have been talking about before, how is this different from other community groups, do you think, who have won similarly in state Supreme Court previously, like Inwood Preservation or Two Bridges? Or is it, do you think?
Well, I think every fight has its own nuances, its own shades. I think ours has an issue of, this is an historic district. It was founded. The economics of it have always been fraught. In other words, the assets from the district created air rights. Air rights were to be sold to support the district, which has happened in the past. Air rights from the district have been sold to build taller structures outside of it. That's how it was supposed to work.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, I think the difference would be holding the gun to the puppy's head.
Mm.
You want a museum, this is what you have to do.
Mm.
And we actually produced other possible means to produce that funding. We came up with other buyers for the air rights. We suggested that there were other sites where the air rights could be used, even if Howard Hughes wanted to use them.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have to happen within an historic district. We got no traction simply because the city was absolutely wedded to the project and its developer.
I see. Mm.
That was a decision made under de Blasio to fast-track this thing. It's a clear case where every other proposal was ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because they really wanted to see this thing get built. And they have been selling or renting this developer in the seaport hand over fist is for years now.
Mm-hmm.
And this developer is paying something for the areas it doesn't own, for the areas it rents, a whopping $4.25 a foot. So I do not know why this developer is so embedded in the psyche of the city in the attempt to sell the seaport to it.
Mm-hmm.
David, can I add on to that?
It's not just this development, it's the whole district that they're trying to hand over, I think.
Yes, Megan, please, by all means.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to his idea about the rent that Hughes is paying for areas inside the historic district. The rest of the mom-and-pop businesses, they're not getting their rent at $4.20-something cents. And so a lot of...
What are they, though? Do you know? You have any idea what that rent might be?
Market rate
mm-hmm.
rent,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's an unfair advantage,
yeah. mm-hmm.
And it's a real struggle to be able to compete against somebody who doesn't have to turn the same
Correct.
Profit and
yes.
doesn't have the same inside note with the city.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Unfair.
Yeah, unfair for sure.
And I just wanted to add that the work that Children's First did on the toxins in the site has been looked at by other community groups
mm.
dealing with similar problems, and they have taken that example to heart.
Mm-hmm. David,
I've had people ask me, David, how do they do that? And I said, well, this is what you do. This is where you find it. And they go, oh, great. And they've looked at your site, you know, and taken it from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, are you worried, David, that the ruling will be overturned by the appellate court, which not only has a record of this, but also ignoring evidence and relying on government agencies, whether truthful or not? What's your feeling about that?
Well, it's a pretty tight decision. And the judge has been overruled before in the appellate division, so I suspect he was prepared for that when he wrote this up. If I could predict that, I'd be rich. I have no idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I certainly realize that, but I'm saying I was asking, you know, what are your concerns around that? And you pretty much said, well, it may be, but this decision thus far is tight.
Hmm? Yeah, if that tower gets built, I think that's going to be the tombstone on the district, frankly.
Hmm.
it's going to overshadow it. It's going to be the first of, I think, other attempts.
Mm-hmm. What worries me about the appeal, the appellate part of this, mm-hmm. is that this the judge Ngoron, the Seaport Coalition, filed this lawsuit originally in May of 2021. This judge is so familiar with the ins and outs and the nuances and the foils. And I mean, this is a case that's built on thousands of pieces of documents. I do worry that another judge, and years of us being there and, you know, delivering more research and information, I do worry about the level of research that would go in, that will go into the appellate side of it. And I feel that that is something that that worries me. I don't know how, is it five judges? I think that's how it works. Five randomly assigned judges read over everything and then make a decision. And here some, I just don't understand how it's going to be as thorough.
Yeah. Well, let's stay with this for a little bit longer. And I so appreciate the two of you joining together with me so we can kind of flesh this out. We've seen developers defying court-ordered TROs, temporary restraining orders, all across the city, like what occurred in Crown Heights and the relevant agencies tasked with enforcement, turning a blind eye like the NYPD and the Department of Buildings. Is this on your radar? And both of you, please let me know what you think about this.
Well, there's a little bit of news that regarding the TRO. The TRO has, in the interim, the temporary restraining order is lifted because Howard Hughes filed an emergency request saying that they will lose their $80 million tax incentive based on, you know, 421A housing credits if they aren't allowed to start doing work in the next 6 weeks. Mm. And which I want to point out again, we brought this lawsuit in 2021. Mm-hmm. Howard Hughes went to the judge and said that This isn't the right time for this lawsuit. It's too early, and it shouldn't be heard.
Wow.
And the judge agreed.
Mm-hmm.
That was 2021,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly they're claiming that there's not enough time if they have to abide by this TRO to qualify for 35 years of not paying taxes, which, by the way, our community will then pick up and have to pay for all the taxes that they're avoiding. That's where we are right now. There's a bit of a stay.
Yeah, go ahead, David.
Yeah, I'm not one to lose any sleep over the fact that, you know, Bill Ackman's Howard Hughes Corporation might get hit with an $80 million tax bill over the next 35 years. Although I do not know where they came up with the figure $80 million. I don't see why they should get that break, but it's a law that's not been renewed. Because that's 421A in New York State, because it was felt that this is basically a giveaway at this point.
Mm.
But they got in under the wire.
Right, right. Are you concerned, David and Megan, are you concerned about what Mayor Adams may do as a result, especially using the city of yes as a justification and his build, baby, build mantra, which could potentially raise height and floor to area, the acronym is FAR, limits, even in historic districts?
Of course.
Yeah. I hope that
this
he looked at a city.
This has implications all over the city.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I hope he looked at a city of yes as a city of yes to good planning. If this is going to be allowed to be put there, as I said, it's in a high-risk flood zone one.
Yes.
Thousand people plus however many they're going to, I'm not sure how many people are going to live in there, but it's a 425 foot story tower, two towers, will have to be evacuated. They're putting them at risk. There's great opportunities to use this site to do great things for an at-risk neighborhood. So I hope the, you know, city of yes looks at city of yes for resiliency, city of yes for safe and responsible development.
Mm-hmm. Well, we shall see. De Blasio did this in the Soho-NoHo rezoning, first time a historic district designation was ignored. So we shall see. Well,
we're looking at other parcels within the district that are now for sale. Mm. We're wondering if somebody's, the speculation going, well, if they can build that tower, if they can break the zoning at 250 Water Street, what else can we do? So it is threatening to the district as a whole, as well as, I think, to other historic districts.
David Sheldon, is there anything that I haven't covered that you think we should know at this point, with the victory in court now and us, waiting to see what appeals are coming forward? Anything that we should know or be looking out for?
I would be looking out for how far the developer gets to push the stay on the temporary restraining order. I think, as Megan pointed out, they do want it both ways. They delayed the case as long as they could, only to now turn around and saying, well, we're under a deadline. You have to let us
mm-hmm.
proceed.
Mm-hmm. Megan, what about you?
I would watch the stay very closely.
Okay. All right. And Megan, anything from you?
So aside from the TRO, mm-hmm. The rest of it is still in place. The LPC mm-hmm. decision, right, that the judge said was not done right. It was illegal the way they tied the quid pro quo, and also just the way the LPC was sort of giving so much deference to Howard Hughes in the entire process. So that is still being appealed as well. That case is in July. We should have that decision by the end of July. So I guess the thing I would point out to everyone is, if you have a nickel, a dime, $5, we are going to be mounting a massive legal bill, mostly because of Howard Hughes that keeps, they keep pushing it off and
yeah.
making us come back again. And
mm-hmm.
again, it's like death by a thousand
yes.
paper cuts that
yes.
cost us a lot of money.
Yeah.
So if things I would also ask the listeners, if they have any extra, nobody has extra money, but if they could allocate some money from their lives to the Seaport Coalition to help fund our legal battle, it will impact all of the historic districts. This decision is a major decision that should write how the whole ship is listing towards developers.
All right, so let's talk about some contact information and how people can make those contributions to your effort, Megan.
Please visit us at seaportcoalition.com. And as soon as you get on that landing page, there's a big old button that says donate here. And it also has great information about the lawsuit and great quotes from the judge and from actually commissioners. Even some of the commissioners talk about this thing as being the devil's bargain with the developer, that they were forced to look at the financial strains and the ties of money. It's a good read, but if you go to seaportcoalition.com, and there's a big old donate button right on that front page.
I like that, a big donate button. That's what we're talking about here. Megan Malvern, founder of Children First NYC. David Sheldon, do you have another contact for us or something in addition to seaportcoalition.com?
There is Save Our Seaport, but I think today we're all together on the Seaport Coalition. I think that's a more up-to-date site. I think that's the place to go. I think the money would be well spent. Our lawyers are the best we can find, and they are donating a rate that is almost a donation. We also have literally hundreds of hours of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we poured through those foils.
Yeah.
There's a lot of volunteer work going into this as much as possible. So anything that we do receive for the legal fund is going to be well used. And I think there is also in the offing a demonstration which has not been scheduled hard yet,
mm-hmm.
but it's early February. We're going to be talking about the Landmarks Preservation Commission
mm-hmm.
and how its purpose has been suborned and how it does have an impact throughout the city. And I think the future of the mission of the Landmarks Preservation Commission is going to be a very critical item coming up for everybody.
Well, we will certainly be looking forward to that information, that announcement. As it comes out, you'll let us know here at Living for the City, and we will certainly let our listenership know. Thank you so much, David Sheldon and Megan Malvern.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks to your listeners as well.
All right. WBAI, New York. This is Living for the City.
Tropezando sin ver luz en mi camino. Cuánta tristeza es no tener quien pueda comprender. Cuánta maldad hubo conmigo. Si el pasado no perdona, hoy cúrate llorando.
Ruben Blades and his Salsa Big Band here on Living for the City on 99.5 FM, WBAI, WBAI.org. I'm Michael G. Haskins, the host of the program, and I thank you for tuning in and listening to the program, and we come your way Wednesdays at 11 a.m. I have a couple of announcements. And I'm going to start, you know, I've been talking about this in the past, a TikTok corner. Yes, I am fond of TikTok. There's a whole lot of good information, I think, there. And since people young and old are on TikTok, there are a couple of things that I want to share. I'm going to share a couple of little clips with you today. I am exercised, I'm annoyed, let's say that, about this woke. What's the problem here? What are you, some of you, and you know who you are, it seems like you don't understand and you're mischaracterizing critical race theory, and certainly the governor of the state of Florida is placing it on grade schools, which it never was. If you listen to the program yesterday morning, you heard, and if you've done any kind of research and independent reading yourself, that this is something that is for graduate level work beyond high school, the college level, law school students. So the issue here for me is tell the truth. That's the issue. And as someone that I'm quite fond of, longtime friend, and he got it from somebody else, but you are what your record says that you are. That's it. All right, I'm going to come to that TikTok corner in a moment, but first, MTOP, Movement to Protect the People, is back in court this Thursday. That's tomorrow. There's some more details coming out, but this is the information that I have to date. There are still some outstanding motions pending, including motions to hold the developers accountable for violating the TRO, temporary restraining order, orders. After 14 motions, 1.5 years of litigation over 12 law firms and corporation counsel, the largest firm in New York City, and over 24 licensed attorneys, pro se litigants, won their case in Brooklyn Supreme Court. In December 2020, after almost a two-year fight, they won the case on the merits. Judge Bodie null and void the Franklin Avenue rezoning application, agreeing with the fact that they had not conducted a proper environmental review process as required by law. So there's an in-person court appearance tomorrow, January. Wait. Now, this can't be right because, you know, it's 2023, so it's got to be an error here. A typo. January 26th at 9:30 a.m. at Brooklyn Supreme Court, 360 Adams Street, Motion Part 95 in Courtroom 956. Now, also, the Senator Schumer celebrates a $350 million in debt relief delivered to taxi medallion owners. Beta V. Desai, the executive director of the Taxi Workers Alliance, has been on this program several times, and she has given us an outline as to the struggles around the medallions and the taxi workers and their struggles to be treated fairly by the city administrations. So the administration's historic relief effort has supported nearly 1,800 medallion owners. New York City Mayor Adams and the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission Chair David Doe and Senator Schumer announced yesterday that the city's taxi medallion relief program has successfully provided more than $350 million in debt relief to medallion owners since the program launched in September of 2022. So we're going to be following that, and no doubt at some point in the not-too-distant future, have Beta Phi Desai back with us to talk a little bit more about that. Across the river from us, across the Hudson River, the Malcolm X Committee, that's the Malcolm X Commemoration Committee, MXCC, will make its Newark, New Jersey debut with a special showing of the film that was once banned in Newark, New Jersey, Mumia, Long Distance Revolutionary by Newark native Steve Vittoria. This will be a special screening of the, this is going to be an unofficial launch of the organization's new project, the Malcolm X Human Rights Festival. It'll take place at the Refall Center at 271 South 9th Street in Newark at 4 p.m. And this is going to take place this Saturday, January 28th. So at the heart of the project is the use of underappreciated film efforts that seek to support or initiate community organizing or education. The event will also be the first for the MXCC in its 30th anniversary. Organizers plan to host an anniversary dinner tribute to founding chairman Herman Ferguson and Yuri Kochiyama, two movement legends who both joined Malcolm's Organization of Afro-American Unity, dedicated to the family of black political prisoners sometime later this year. They also intend to make the festival's official launch by year's end. Now, back in 2013, organizers sought to have the film, which features appearances and commentary by legendary activist performers Ruby Dee and Dick Gregory, social justice legends Angela Davis and Juan Gonzalez, among others, shown at Cityplex 12, Newark's only movie theater. However, This is 2013. However, law enforcement officials compelled the theater's management and owners not to show the film. I was at that demonstration then. This was the summer. I remember that. The summer 2013. And a few months later, if you recall, October, Superstorm Sandy came through. So for more information, the organizer is Zaid Muhammad. I'm not going to give out his phone number, but you can follow the Malcolm X Commemoration Committee on Facebook. And what do I have here? I have a book in front of me. Should I do the book first, or should I go to the... Okay, let's do this. Where are we? We are here. I've neglected to mention that we are listener-sponsored and commercially free. We have been listener-sponsored and commercially free since 1960. I haven't been here that long. I've been here for a while, but not that long. We depend upon listeners like you to support us. So I'm asking you to do what you can. I have no premium, that is a thank you gift, to offer right now. It's just the radio station, because that is the premium in my estimation, with all of the faults, the issues, the outstanding issues of getting premiums out to people in a timely manner, all of those issues notwithstanding. And I can say that because I don't have something invested now that hasn't been fulfilled. So I can, you know, easily say that, but I do know exactly what you mean. I'm asking you to make a contribution in support of WBAI and certainly for Living for the City. And the number to call, we have our call center, is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Let's take another little Sankofa look, shall we? Let's look in the past.
Watch this video, and I'll be right back. Trigger warning, not an easy video to watch.
Slaves are fattened for auction, like livestock. Dark-skinned men are bought for the fields, light-skinned women for the house. Traders lie about their ages, even dye a slave's gray hairs.
For the plantation owners, it was like just going to your local supermarket to get sugar or flour. They had become so desensitized to the humanity of the slave that they did not see them as human beings.
Eliza's from a state plantation. She's being sold with her two children, Emily and Randall. In Louisiana, it's illegal for children under 11 to be taken from their parents.
Boy, boy, come over here.
It happens all the time.
So please.
Here you go. Hey, look at this.
Over half the sales at auction will tear a family apart.
If you've ever been eight, to think of being separated from your mother and your father and sold and you'll never see them again. The horror of that, the poignancy of all of that, and yet that's the kind of thing that happened across the South up until the end of slavery.
Okay, my final offer?
$100
for that man?
Yeah.
$900.
Please,
I'm
my child.
Oh. Sir! I have seen mothers kissing for the last time the faces of their dead offspring. But never have I seen such an exhibition of intense grief as when Eliza was parted from her child.
See, although we celebrate January 1st with fireworks and champagne, remember that enslaved people dreaded this day. They dreaded January 1st because that's the day that they can be ripped apart from their families. We have to learn the accurate history of this country, because once you learn the history, then you'll start to understand the generational trauma that people of color in this country have, especially Black people and Native and Indigenous people. We have to learn the accurate history. So remember, diversity equals power. We can change the world if we work together and protect Black women. Until next time.
Oh, yes, most definitely protect Black women. Now, I know that that was a video. The audio, video. Listen, use your imagination. This is radio, and that you are listening to the radio. So, and that's the beauty of radio, in my opinion, that you get to use your imagination and picture what is going on. Now, I don't know what you want your children to learn about the history of this country. You do want your children to know the history of this country, don't you? Nobody is saying that little Annie or little Timmy, that the purpose is to make them feel bad about themselves. How do you come to that conclusion? Tell the truth. Tell the truth. That's it. You are what your record says that you are. Now, I have, what do I got here? Do I have enough time for this? And here, on the other side, you know, there's always this discussion about, you know, you have some people. I remember I heard Felipe say this for a month or so ago. He was talking to some young people, and they said, well, I have no connection to Africa. Don't you call me an African? Yeah, there are people, young people and older people too, that think like that. But then on the other side, all over in the motherland, people that, well, I don't have any connection to Americans, American Blacks. I don't have any connection. Let's take another listen, shall we?
Well, we don't want them here.
They're your brothers and sisters.
They're not our brothers.
They are.
They were taken away. Unfortunately, we were developed by ourselves.
So I come across this video on TikTok, and I'm shocked, disappointed, I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm really furious, actually, that a fellow African person can come out and say such bullshit on their own people. This man says African Americans are not Africans, they should not be seen as Africans, they are Americans, they've lived in America for 300 years, that we do not need them. And that, yeah, unfortunately, my African ancestors, our ancestors were taken through slavery. So, yeah, that takes away the descendants' right to the continent. My ancestors were taken, so the descendants shouldn't have the right to the African continent. Does that make sense? Does it make sense? He also goes on and says Africa will make it on its own because we have the resources. And my question is, when has Africa ever made it alone? And which resources are you talking about? Does Africa control its own resources? Does it? I mean, if I'm to give an example, let's talk about the BRICS. Yeah, Brazil, Russia, China, India, and then, yeah, South Africa. Still, they chose South Africa because you know why? There's their people. There's that mark. They did not include a black dominant country in Africa. Let's say Nigeria, they have oil. In Uganda, we have gold and oil. DRC Congo has diamond. There's so many African countries with dark people dominantly, and they have resources. It was not included. If you are there and you think other races of people are going to come and help you as Africa to grow, it's not going to happen. And if you think Africa, you're going to make it alone, it's not going to happen. We as black people, we as dark people, we need each other, and that's how we are going to, you know, unite and make it happen. So this person is ignorant and stupid. I don't care if he's African. He's damn stupid and is actually a racist to his own people. That is the kind of brainwash that was put in Africans, especially our parents. There was so much brainwash to think that if it does not come from a white person, it's not going to happen. So my fellow descendants, don't be scared by listening to these stupid people. You know, they just want to see us divided. And I believe in the love that I talk about, because trust me, we are still treated like this because we are so much divided. And when we start loving each other, time will come when they touch one person, they are touching all of our hearts, and that's when we will rise. So come to the motherland, come to visit your motherland. You have every ancestral right to be in the motherland. Intermarry with Africans. Invest in Africa. It's your home. It's your right. It's like everything to you guys like it is to us. And yeah, just stay away from these negative people. I'm so disappointed at this person. And I hope they see this video and change their mindset, because they need to change themselves. Yeah. Let's rise, people.
Let's rise, people. I have the book in front of me, Adwa, Empress Taitu and Emperor Menelik in Love and War, by Milton Alamadi. I have my book here. Thank you so much for that, Milton. I didn't or do not have enough time. I wanted to read a piece of the prologue for you, but you'll have to get the book yourself and get it where good books like this one are sold. That's Adwa, A-D-W-A, Empress Taitu and Emperor Menelik in Love and War. That's going to do it for this edition of Living for the City. I'm Michael G. Haskins. You have any concerns or thoughts? My email address is mghaskins@wbai.org. I'll see you next week with a new program. Please remember to surround yourself with people who respect and treat you well.
This is Ralph Pointer. Join me and others every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This program will feature that few. What are your views on these issues that impact your life today? What are your views on America today? What are your views on America's future? Can we talk? Call in 212-209-2877. Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial.
We're just about at the top of the hour here in New York City at 99.5 FM, WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. There is still time for you to make a contribution, make a call of support, financial support to WBAI for the program that just left the air, Living for the City, for the entirety of WBAI. All of the programs, the program that you just heard a promo for. Betty Davis and Ralph Pointer, that program that's coming up. All of the programs here on WBAI. What's Going On, our 7 a.m. morning program from 7 to 8 o'clock. Looking forward to hearing you and looking forward to your contributions to this listener-sponsored commercial-free station. The number is 212-209-2950. Take a moment, It's only going to take you a couple of minutes. Take a moment and call and support WBAI 212-209-2950. Listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio in New York. It's 12 noon.